You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Of all the expressions from the Bible that have made their way out into the wider world, few have been so far-reaching as the metaphors of salt and light that Jesus uses in Matthew's Sermon on the Mount. You hear them used in all sorts of contexts, from folksy sayings like, "She's salt of the earth people," to White House speeches. President Reagan's use of the city upon a hill image is probably the most familiar, but that was actually JFK who first used it back in 1961. Today, the eyes of all people are truly upon us, and our governments in every branch, at every level, national, state, and local, must be as a city upon a hill, constructed and inhabited by people aware of their great trust and their great responsibilities. It seems our aspirations may have changed a little bit since back then. If you ever have a chance to get out on the Sea of Galilee, you might catch sight of an archaeological dig above Kibbutz En Gev. At the pinnacle of an outcropping in the Golan Heights used to be a city called Hippus. In the first century, I can imagine that this prominent city set on a hill was visible from anywhere around the lake. I can even imagine Jesus gesturing to it to make his point. Now, these are all memorable images because they're pretty basic. They're not relatable because Jesus lifted them up out of nowhere. They're relatable because they reflect the reality of life, both then and now. Growing up, I was taught that first century Palestine was an unsophisticated and backward place, and I used to picture the disciples as poor subsistence fishermen. Well, maybe, maybe not. Archaeology has revealed that it was actually a pretty cosmopolitan place, with several major industries in the region, exporting a gourmet fish all over the Mediterranean. Josephus reports over 230 boats working on the Sea of Galilee in the first century, and it's a small little lake. What is now called St. Peter fish, it's a kind of tilapia, was exported all over Rome and Egypt, and the insides were fermented into the ubiquitous Roman condiment garum. So here's the point. How did they get their fish and sauce to market all over the Mediterranean? It was salt. The local economy and people's lives depended on preserving their catch and fermenting their garum with salt. So keep that in mind as you hear the "you are the salt of the earth" expression that Jesus uses. The worthlessness of salt that doesn't do its job increases in intensity every time it's told in the Gospels. The expression first appears in the Gospel of Thomas and is then picked up by Mark, Matthew, and Luke. In Mark, unsalty salt is just worthless. In Luke, it's to be thrown away. But in today's passage from Matthew, unsalty salt is to be thrown away and trampled underfoot. Yikes. So let's hear these familiar words from Matthew before we consider the way they apply to our lives today.
Our words of wisdom today come from Matthew 5, verses 13 through 16. Let me tell you why you are here. You are here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. Here's another way to put it. You are here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Once upon a time, there was a quiet man who lived high above an Austrian village along the slopes of the Alps. He was hired by the village council to clear away the debris that fell into the spring that fed the stream that flowed through the village. Faithfully, silently, he tended the spring. He patrolled the hills, he removed leaves and branches, and wiped away the silt that would otherwise clog the flow of water. Over the years, the village became a popular tourist attraction with its crystal clear stream and beautiful views of the water. Swans came and glided on the surface. One evening, the village council met for its semi-annual meeting, and reviewing the budget, someone noticed Keeper of the Spring and asked, "Why do we keep him on the payroll year after year? No one ever sees him. Have you ever seen him? Have you ever met the man? He could be just taking our money and doing us no good whatsoever. He's no longer necessary." Well, everyone was convinced and they agreed and voted to dismiss the old man. Well, nothing much changed for several weeks, but by autumn, the trees began to shed their leaves. Branches built up dams in the crevices. The amount of water coming downstream began to diminish, and what was left was dark and cloudy. Places along the bank became slimy and smelly. The swans left. The tourists left. People got sick from drinking the water. An emergency village council meeting was held, and after much discussion, they realized their error. They hired back the Keeper of the Spring. Soon the stream came back to life, and with it, the vitality and well-being of the whole village. I wonder if it's fair to compare the Keeper of the Spring with what we Jesus followers are called to mean to the world. Often not seen, but for good or for bad, influencing those around us. Could be anyone, really, not just Christians, but Jesus said that we are salt and light. These are not instructions for us to try harder to be salt and light. They're acknowledging that, as followers of Jesus, we simply are salt and light to the world. We can't help it. It's not a call for self-exertion, but to simply acknowledge what is. The ironic part is that any self-exertion on our part would have to come from trying not to be an influence. Salt is salt, NaCl, sodium chloride. For it not to be what it is or do what it does would take some pretty fancy chemical changes. Just as it is, the Salt Institute, bet you didn't know one of those existed, claims that there are over 14,000 industrial uses for salt. That's a lot of possibilities. But I want to emphasize just one today: preservation. In pre-electric days, the way to preserve meat and other foods was to salt it down. When the first Jesus followers heard him say, "You are the salt of the earth," they wouldn't have thought, as we might today, "Ah, salt makes food more flavorful." Now that's true, but more importantly in this story, salt is a preservative. It keeps things from going bad. And as modern-day followers of Jesus, we have the same job. Jesus is saying, hey, we are naturally going to influence the world. When we don't, it's because we've made a conscious decision not to, or have decided it's safer to stay undercover. As salt of the earth, one of the things we preserve is the story. Our family's story, our country's story, our faith story. Memories of both the good and the bad, of what makes a difference and what doesn't, of people who have, through hindrance or encouragement brought us to where we are today. To forget those who have paved the way for us, their trials and sacrifices, is to lose some of the flavor of life and sets us up for repeating mistakes or taking for granted things that have a lot to do with giving us the life we have now. At the first church I served, one of our members had been in the thick of the Battle of the Bulge. A German shell hit the building his unit was fighting from and instantly killed everyone but Merrill. Since being dug out of the debris, his unit's only survivor, he spent his whole life thinking about that moment and trying to live a life that was worthy of having lived. Remembering that kind of sacrifice reminded me of the closing scene of the movie Saving Private Ryan. In the throes of the D-Day landings, a squad has been sent to retrieve a certain Private Ryan from the front. He's the last remaining son in a family, and the military wants him out of harm's way. One by one, virtually every member of the squad is killed in the effort. And finally, the last moment, after finding Ryan, Tom Hanks' character, Captain Miller, is mortally wounded. As he lays there and dies on the bridge, no doubt thinking about all the men who died to rescue Ryan, Miller looks up at the young private and says, "Earn this. Earn it." The magic of cinematography then morphs the teenage Ryan into a 70-something-year-old vet visiting Captain Miller's grave decades later at a Normandy cemetery. Ryan speaks to Miller and says, "Every day I think of what you said to me on the bridge, and I've tried to live my life as best I could." The one for whom so many had died comes back, not so much to say thank you, but to remember that which motivated him his entire life. Earn this. Earn it. We live in a time when there's lots of suspicion around one another's motivations, politically and spiritually. There are different ways of looking at how to be American or how to be Christian for that matter, and disagreements continue to create animosity, especially as different ways of being Christian slop over into our political lives and social lives. My hope is that on this day, in honor of the holiday we observe this weekend, we can remember the story of all of those who have gone before us, contributing their all so we can enjoy the privilege of disagreeing over how to do being an American better. Every time I remember the story, I ask myself, can I say that I've lived the life that I can look back on with satisfaction? Have I been like salt, preserving those memories for the good? Have I taken my role as a light in the world seriously? You may remember, too, that the word religion itself is about preservation. To religion, or religio from the Latin ligamentum, like ligaments, is to reconnect. To religio is to remember, to bring together all the different and disparate parts of the body of Christ, you and me. We come together, remembering and remembering. So our stream of thought for today is remembering remembers us. Remembering pulls us together because remembering usually helps us be clear about principles and ideas that are still worth embracing. Like salt, preserving those stories and remembering them is part of our saltiness. Without remembering, we tend to think of ourselves as the long-awaited pinnacle of all of history. You know, Harvard has been around for over 380 years now. And my professor Harold Beck used to tell a story about Harvard's 250th anniversary back in 1886. then-President Charles W. Eliot wouldn't let them have money to throw a big party, so they decided that they'd have a parade. They got organized. Faculty, the president of the university, three alumni who were presidents of the United States, the seniors, etc., all of which left the freshmen in an unenviable position. The night before the parade, two of the freshmen had a brilliant idea. So here comes the parade. Are you ready? Here's the president, the three presidents, the faculty, the seniors, the juniors, and so on. And here come the freshmen, two of them carrying a banner on which are the following words: Harvard University has waited 250 years for us. Well, not to be too cheeky, but I think those freshmen may have been onto something. I like to balance out the remembrance of what others have done with an appreciation for the idea that the universe has waited nearly 14 billion years for us. And now, remembering, it's our turn. Tomorrow we remember those who died in service to our country. But there are others to remember too, those who don't have their own day. Maybe someone who you're remembering or thinking of right now, who sacrificed for you or your family in a way that, looking back, makes one marvel. As salt of the earth, we are called to preserve the stories. And as we remember, hopefully we're motivated to set our sights higher, to reach further, and to make of our lives something that is worthy of the many sacrifices that have made us who we are, the stories that show us who we can become. We're preservative. We're keepers of the spring. We may not always be visible, but without us, things can go bad in a hurry. So embrace who you are. Remember the stories. And know that the world is waiting. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.